WVAI and the voices that you can hear on this listener-sponsored station. Again, 212-209-2950. Please come forward right now. Let's do it for Samori. Let's do it for the other Samoris who are yet to be heard on WBAI. We thank you for your support. Please come forward now and give us a call, 212-209-2950. Thank you. Thank you so much.
No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace.
Wish I could take your tears and replace them with laughter. Long live Palestine.
While we listen to tunes made by ignorant fools, Israel blocked the UN from delivering food. They bring in the troops and you won't even glimpse of the news. They make money off the products that we're quick to consume. And it's not simply a question of differing views. Forget emotions, this is facts, what I spit is the truth. Makes no difference if you're a Christian or if you're a Jew. They're just people living in different conditions to you. They still die when you bomb their schools, mosques and hospitals. It's not because of rockets, please God, can you stop this all? I'm not related to the strangers on the TV, but I relate, cause those strangers could have been me. Words could never ever explain the raw tragedy. It's not a war, they're just murdering more rapidly, and we are automatically supporting pure savagery. Imagine how you feel. Yeah.
The song that you just heard was Together by Betty, and this program is Out FM, a progressive lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, two-spirit radio show, intersex as well, and queer and questioning. We are broadcasting from a progressive, with a progressive intersectional perspective, and the program is part of the Radio Free Palestine. It's an annual 24-hour marathon airing on Nakba Day, which is May 15th. With participation from community and progressive radio stations and producers across five continents, Out FM originates on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and on the web at WBAI.org. You can find our show at outfm.org. Follow and like our posts on Twitter at Out FM or our Facebook group and page, as well as on Instagram. You can find links to these accounts at outfm.org. I'm Naomi Brussel, and my co-host is
Pauline Park.
Hi, Pauline. We're going to have a very exciting show tonight. Lots of guests and lots of issues, but the main issue is the genocide in Gaza. And we're going to be first focusing on queer participants in the campaign of students and also later of workers against Israel's genocidal assault on Gaza. Our first segment is a panel of two students and a faculty member who have been active in the campus sit-ins and encampments, both in New York City, in New Paltz News, New York State, and also in Los Angeles at the California University, UCLA. And later on, you're going to hear our second piece, which is about employees or with employees at the Google New York City location who've challenged the Google Corporation's active participation in the Israel occupation, the occupation of Palestine, and in the genocide in Gaza. So that's what's coming up, and let me start by introducing you to our three guests for the first segment. The first of our guests is Hannah Lippert. And Hannah is a PhD student at the Linguistics Department in UCLA. Her research focuses on language, meaning, structure, and documentation. And she's a member of Graduate Students for Justice in Palestine, GSJP, and the United Auto Workers 4811, grad student workers union at UCLA. And she lives in Los Angeles. So welcome, Hannah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. And the next guest I want to introduce you to is Kita Ziegler, who uses they, them pronouns and is a humanities professor at the School of Visual Arts in New York City, where they have been teaching for 7 years about social movements and also the climate crisis and collective action. And they have been supporting the students that are involved at the School for Visual Arts, SVA, this past semester, who are protesting about the genocide in Gaza. And our last, say hi, Kita.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
Okay, and the last guest that we have is Ray Ferrara, who is an undergraduate at the State University in New Paltz. So welcome, Ray. Ray was a little bit afraid she was going to be late because she's been driving people to court. There's a lot of people who have been going to court in New Paltz area. So the first thing I want to ask you to do, if you could just give a capsule of what has been happening on your campus with the protests about what has happened with the genocide in Gaza. Could you start, please, Hannah?
Sure, yeah. So like you mentioned, I go to UCLA. Our encampment there began on the 25th of April, which was a Thursday. It lasted about exactly a week. The police raided it, and it was gone on the following Thursday. It was mostly organized by SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine, and a coalition we have across UC campuses called UC Divest. A lot of the encampment was like really a lovely community, but there was also a lot of violence, especially at night, from counter protesters. And then in particular, the raid. So I was one of the like over 200 students arrested, at the end of the encampment.
And who raided
and then
you?
It was a combination of UCPD, which is the like University of California Police Department, and LAPD, and California Highway Patrol.
And how many people were arrested? What happened? There was a prior attack before the police came, am I correct?
Yeah, there was an attack from the counter protesters the previous night that lasted about 4 hours, and no law enforcement interfered with that. They were there for a time and they watched it happen. The ultimate like raid and sweep was like coordinated between those three groups of law enforcement, and there were 5 buses, I think, of arrested students. The amount of people was over 200. We were taken to 3 different like jails or processing places, and then like released gradually throughout the day because this was very early Thursday morning.
And what were the charges?
The charges were failure to disperse or unlawful assembly. There were further arrests last Monday, and those were charging a conspiracy to commit burglary. Those were in just students arriving in a parking garage. So I think none of these were things that we hadn't anticipated this level of violent reaction.
Were you injured?
That seemed outsized.
Were you injured?
To an extent, when they arrested me, I was like shoved around a lot. They were using batons, and we were like pushed and poked and like dragged. on the ground. I saw people who, I was pepper sprayed at one point the previous night, but not nearly as bad as some people. There were people who were bleeding and had to go to the hospital. The most long-lasting thing for me is that the zip ties were so tight on my wrists that I still don't have feeling in one of my hands. But fortunately, nothing longer lasting than that.
Anna, could I ask you a quick question? This is Pauline Park. Some people have described the counter-protesters as a Zionist mob. Did you have a sense that the police, both UCPD and LAPD, refrained from intervening because they were sympathetic with the Zionists who attacked the encampment?
So from my perspective, the attack was a combination of Zionists and like Proud Boy white supremacists, based on what they said and were wearing. The various like law enforcement agencies were following their instructions, I assume, which were not to interact. Although there were some like overtly hostile like exchanges that, so there's a recording of at least one student begging them to intervene, and they said something along the lines of "You brought this upon yourself," or I don't remember the exact quote, but it is out there.
Yeah. Thank you. So we're going to move on to to the two arrested people first, and Ray Ferrara, you were at SUNY New Paltz. So you want to say what happened at the State University there?
Oh man, something very similar happened to us. This was about a little over a week ago on May 2nd. We set up our encampment on May 1st, and the president of our school arrived on May 1st. To talk with us about our demands, which were divestment from Israel. And this is the closest we had gotten to any administrator acknowledging our existence and our, what we wanted from the university. So I consider that to be effective. On May 2nd, even though we were assured by the university that if we took down our tents, no police, we would be granted amnesty, was their words. Almost four different police agencies got together and raided us at around 10:40 on May 2nd. The official amount of arrests is around 134. I'm not convinced by that number. I think it's way more. The nature of these arrests is that a lot of them were done after the protesters initially were arrested. So I mean, I wouldn't know. I wasn't there. I was in a police van. But the police then started kind of running after anyone who they could find. And so I am certain that the number is more than that.
And were you injured in that situation?
Everybody I know has the same bruise from where the cops used a baton on us to try and break our arm chain.
You linked arms to try to protect each other.
Yes, we did. Everyone I know has the same bruise. That's the extent of my physical injuries. But just like Hannah was saying, a lot of people don't have feeling in their hands from how tight the cuffs were. It's very common. There's actually an 82-year-old woman who was with us who was knocked unconscious, who was thrown off of where she was sitting and was knocked unconscious by the police. She was not, I just found out today because I saw her, she wasn't booked at any of the police agencies because she was in the hospital. They were kind enough not to then arrest her. One of my friends wasn't so lucky, though. They were knocked unconscious by the police as well. And they were not sent to the to the hospital. They were just sent to booking. And it wasn't until someone else in the station like told the police to take them to the hospital because they were bleeding and they were concussed that they were actually given many medical help. And then they were given a resisting arrest charge, even though they were not conscious. For the arrest.
Yeah, well, it's a form of a resistance, I guess.
Being
unconscious,
I guess.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask you a question? This is Pauline Park. I understand that Daryl Wheeler, the president of SUNY New Paltz, is an openly gay African American. Has that made any difference in terms of the way the administration has treated students, faculty members involved with the encampment?
It has, only in that it has made Wheeler, I think, a lot more afraid of us and a lot more afraid of maybe losing his station of superiority over us. It has not made him any more compassionate to any of the Black or queer students that he brutalized by calling the police. Because something that we noticed is that how people were being treated by these four different agencies of police that night was directly related to their gender and their race. I'm kind of psychoanalyzing him a little bit here, but I think he's very insecure about his status as the president. But I don't think that makes him feel any allegiance towards us. I think he thinks of us as roadblocks in the way to his own success.
Yeah, and I just point out parenthetically that Manu Shafiq, the president of Columbia University, is the first, I believe, woman, the first person of color, and the first person of Arab descent to lead Columbia. So that says something about representation.
Okay, well, we're going to move on to Quito. Hi, Quito.
Hi there.
Your school is much smaller than UCLA and SUNY New Paltz, the School of Visual Arts, but had a very spirited sit-in there. You want to tell us something about what happened? You're a faculty member there.
Correct. I've been teaching at SVA for 7 years, and I am the activism professor on campus. So I know a lot of the students who are part of the Students for Justice in Palestine, which up until last week or a couple of weeks ago was student-led, student-organized, and sort of they had their own internal ways of organizing, and it was by them for them to reach the people at the school. And they'd had, you know, a variety of not success trying to get the president of SVA to make a statement publicly condemning the genocide. He had immediately responded after October 7th condemning Hamas, but he never amended it. He never said anything else. And the truth is, I don't know if he's going to. So the students had, it was the morning of May 2nd for us, which was the morning after all of the arrests at CUNY and Columbia, or where very brutal arrests had happened. The students had decided to take over an administrative office building that is situated inside of a dorm at SVA. They made demands. They posted what their demands were about. There were students who were comfortable being arrested that were occupying the office itself. And then there were a number of other students on the street sort of supporting the ones who were inside doing that. The school had said that they were going to call the cops. And they had invited in two NYPD officers to do a wellness check, is what they called it earlier that morning. So two police officers came and cruised the students while they were outside, you know, having their occupation. And the school had said, the school decided to officially shut down that office for the day, and were charging the students with trespassing on a closed school office, was sort of like their mechanism for inviting in the cops and for shutting down the resistance. They were given a deadline of, I think, about noon to get out. I arrived at 1, and one of the students outside who knew me said, could you be our faculty liaison? And I said, sure. So I went inside to where the students were, and they were sitting with two members of the administration negotiating about what was going to happen. And it was very tense when I walked in. And we were right at that deadline where the cops were supposed to be called in. They were supposed to be shutting down, and they said we closed the office. And I suppose I intervened in the best ways that I could and appealed to the humanity of the administration. It's a funny thing being faculty, and it's a funny thing being like, this is a student-led activity. I am not part of it, even though my heart is with the people of Palestine, and I agree with the things, you know, that are motivating my students. They move in the ways that make sense for them. I move in ways that make sense for me. But I 100% have their backs and think that they have the right to speak freely about the things that they want to and to make demands in the ways that make sense to them.
But they were not arrested.
They were not arrested.
Why not?
They were on the verge of arrest. I spoke really strongly inside of that office, and I said, listen to me, do not do. I just was really blunt. And I said, do not call the cops on your students. These are your students. They are acting with their hearts and their consciences. They're not doing anything wrong. They're speaking their mind. And yes, you may like, sure, you can come up with whatever technicalities you want to remove them from your office and to call in the cops. But you're doing that. They are 20 years old. They have a conscience. They are speaking it to you. They are concerned, very rightfully, about a genocide that is taking place. Very concerned that they are students where there are other students of the world whose universities have been bombed by people who our college invests in. So we need to understand that this is not business as usual, and you should not just call cops as usual. I said what happened last night was an atrocity. Do not repeat that.
You're saying what had happened last night was at the City University at
Columbia. There were hundreds of arrests.
Right, that were the violent. City College of New York. Yes, correct. They also. So well, they didn't do it.
You know, I wasn't on the phone call between the administration and the administration making all the decisions. So, you know, the decision was ultimately theirs. But they came back out and they said, OK, we're not going to arrest you guys. You're welcome to stay. The office is closed. We're all leaving. So have fun in an empty office. So the students did camp out in that office overnight. But by the next morning, they decided for their own sake to move on to a different space that was louder and more public and more disruptive.
Well, kudos to you, Kito, for that helpful intervention. I would just point out that the president of Wesleyan University, Michael Roth, who, by the way, is Jewish, decided not to call the cops on Wesleyan students and allowed the encampment, the Gaza Solidarity encampment, which they're calling the Wesleyan Liberated Zone, to remain. So by no means is it necessary to call the cops in order to maintain order and security on a college campus.
It's not. Well, I also think that it's reasonable as a community to discuss things that are happening in the world and to make space for that outside of the sort of business as usual of running a college when there is something extraordinary happening in the world. I think it's our responsibility as adults to acknowledge that and to make space, like a school administrator is supposed to be caring for a community of people. You need to make space for those conversations to happen, especially when the students are demanding it.
Right. So I want to ask, because we have very, very little time for so much information we would like to do, but we only have just a relatively short segment here. Does the three of you, Ray, Hannah, and Kito, does your identification as being part of the queer community or being whatever your identity is related to that, have anything to do with the participation that you've been doing in this protest process? What do you think?
For me, absolutely. I think we've definitely seen the queer community come out in droves through Palestine. I think a lot of people understand that this is an intersectional issue that affects everybody. Something that a lot of my queer friends and I talk about a lot is combating this idea of pinkwashing coming out of Israel, where Israel says that like it's not safe for queer people anywhere in the Middle East except for in Israel, except that's not true. And I also think that the issue of police brutality is also interconnected with this. And like I said before, my queer friends were treated horrendously and I think something that I keep saying is that a lot of people are angry about what happened to us on May 2nd. And like that is the same struggle as what's happening in Palestine. So that's what kind of drives me as a queer person to speak out about this.
What about you, Hannah?
Ray said that really well. I agree with pretty much everything. I would hope that any way in which I am like, marginalized or have negative experience with cops and so on would help me like sympathize with other people going through the something similar, even if it is much more extreme or like in a very different environment that I'm in. And I also really liked what Ray said about the pinkwashing. It also omits like sort of the existence of queer Palestinians. And as well as any queer support for Gaza, like around the world. And so it was important to me to show that that is not true.
Thank you. We have only a couple more minutes. Kito, what's your opinion or experience?
You know, queerness is an intersectional identity. We come in every single variety. And that means that, like, you know, and as you were saying earlier, like the identities of who the college presidents were doesn't necessarily have an impact on how you behave. But what I love about queerness and transness is, you know, none of us are free until all of us are free. And I think that because as a community, we cut across so many identities and so many experiences, we do understand all of the ways that 99% of the world is left out of, you know, the profits from extraction and the devastation of the earth. So it's actually kind of normal that there's a lot of queer people out there, because I think we understand, marginalization and issues and you know, we understand the interconnections of things.
Well, so can you give us just a little hint, maybe 1 minute apiece, of what you think is going to happen in the next period of time? And we, I mean, think we have to expect that this horror of the genocide in Gaza is going to continue for some time. Do you have any sense what's going to happen at your schools related to that? It's the end of semester in some places.
At UCLA, we are on a quarter system, so we have a few more weeks still of the academic year. There's currently a grad student strike authorization vote. It started yesterday, ends tomorrow. So there's a possibility of us going on strike, which is very uncommon for like a political cause. And also continues to be a very increased police presence on campus. They've actually restructured how the UCPD works to give them more power and have it fully under the chancellor of the university. But our demands have not changed. So like divest, disclose, boycott, etc. are the same, and that will continue regardless of what they do.
What about at New Paltz? What do you think?
New Paltz is unique in that, like, we're not a private college, so like some of the legality around what we're doing now is different. Like, we all get trespassing charges, but we're not, like, we're allowed on a public campus. So they actually did not have a right to arrest any of us. But beyond that, I think the entire SUNY system, I invite everyone to go look at some of the videos coming out of the other SUNY raids, because there's a lot of brutality very similar to ours, and a lot of like institutional pressure. Our university has a hard time getting it together when it comes to actually like suspending anyone. So none of us have actually been suspended yet, but many students were suspended at Stony Brook and at Purchase and at Albany. So as for what's coming next, I think the different SUNY schools, after this very quick turnaround of brutality and of being shut down by our universities, I think we're ready to follow in the footsteps of what student protesters did about South African apartheid, which is to go to the SUNY Board of Trustees and try and take divestment up with them.
Okay, thank you. I need to go to Quito because we're almost out of time. Quito, what do you think is going to happen? Is SVA quickly?
SVA is out for the summer. Three of the students have disciplinary hearings. I just, like, since you asked the question, received word that one of the students just got, like, her discipline set aside. It was overturned today. So they were going to remove her from being an RA this summer and take away her housing and her work, and they just overturned that. So she remains valid. I mean, I don't know what happens next. I know that there are, you know, the tactics of, like, demand, disrupt, and continue this dialogue. I would like to see us have more dialogue as a community and for the SVA community to organize together to make these demands more collective.
Thank you, Quito. So Quito Ziegler from the School of Visual Arts, and Ray Farrar from the SUNY New Paltz, and Hannah Lippert from UCLA. Thank you so much for coming on our show. And we hope to be talking to you as this process continues. And now we're going to go to a musical interlude.
Yeah. The people, they won't leave. What is threatening about divesting a wanted peace? The problem isn't the protests, it's what they're protesting. It goes against what our country is funding. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. When I was 7, I learned a lesson from Cuban Easy E. What was it again? Oh, yeah. The police.
badges and badges protecting property in a system that was designed by white supremacy. But the people are in the streets. You can pay off Meta, you can't pay off me. Politicians who serve by any means, APAC, Koofy, and all the companies. You see, we sell fear around the land of the free, but this generation here is about...
Yes, Macklemore's Heinz Hall, a song that the great Macklemore actually created in response to what happened at Columbia University. You're listening to Out FM, a progressive lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, two-spirit, intersex, queer, and questioning radio show from a progressive intersectional perspective. Out FM originates on listener-sponsored WBAI New York and on the web at WBAI.org. You can find our show at outfm.org. Follow and like our posts on Twitter at outfm, one word, our Facebook group and page, as well as Instagram. You can find links to all these accounts at outfm.org. I'm Pauline Park. I'm joined in the studio by Naomi Brussel.
Hi. So, Pauline, you want to introduce the next segment?
And we are delighted to have two special guests, Alex Story and Shane Anderson. Welcome, Alec and Shane.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us. You both have really important stories to tell because last month in mid-April, a bunch of people who work at Google, both here in New York and in San Francisco, mounted a protest protesting Google's deep complicity with apartheid Israel's Gaza genocide through Project Nimbus. I understand that Google fired at least 50 people, but also that not all of them were actually involved in the protest. Some of them simply came down to the lobby to observe the demonstration. So Alec and Shane, can you tell me what happened? Alec in New York, Shane in San Francisco, on that fateful day, and what has transpired since then?
I guess I can start, and then maybe Shane can talk about what happened in the SF Bay. So this was an action coordinated by a group called No Tech for Apartheid that's been organizing within and out and across the tech industry for a number of years now. And the main topic is this contract that Google has with the Israeli military and indeed the Israeli government as a whole called Project Nimbus. And I'll talk about what that is in a moment, but I also want to note this wasn't just about this contract. The protest was also about, and this is important, addressing the ongoing harassment, intimidation, silencing, bullying, and so on of our Palestinian Arab and Muslim coworkers, partly in association with, you know, talking about this contract and partly because of everything that's been happening since October 7th. So this was a sit-in. Folks sat in an area of the New York office that's sort of a common, it's got a coffee machine, it's got some desks, some tables you can sit at and type if you want. Dropped a banner down a convenience vertical area. And in California, I think I want to hand it to Shane because what they did was a little more impressive.
So in the Bay Area, we sat in Google Cloud CEO Thomas Kurian's office. We live streamed the entire time we were there. We had hundreds of people watching the live stream, including many Google workers. And, you know, to be honest, like, I had kind of not expected it to go as long as it did. I kind of expected Google to just throw us out as soon as it could. But we were there for 9 hours before they finally arrested us. There were 5 people who participated in the sit-in and, like, stayed there until, until we were forcibly removed. And I believe there were 4 people in New York, so that's 9 people altogether who, like, you know, participated in the sit-in. As you mentioned earlier, 15 people have been retaliated against at least. All those other people were not directly participating in the sit-in, like, you know, some of them were just wearing shirts. Some of them were, like, outside at the public rallies that were accompanying these actions. Some, like, handed out some flyers, but that's, like, you know, that's it. And then, we even did have a few people who were not at all involved with the action, just kind of showed up day of and were retaliated against for just that much.
I'd like to hear how you two are responding to the retaliation, but to step back for just a minute, how did you two come to work at Google? What did you do there? And how did you become involved with Palestine Solidarity? Alec?
Yeah, so I joined Google out of undergrad some mumble years ago. I was a staff software engineer, so I've been around a long time. That's a fairly senior role. I was working on debugging tools for Google Search. I guess I arrived at Palestine Organizing through the union at Google, Alphabet Workers Union, which is a minority union. We're doing really cool stuff, right? Like, we're the largest union of tech workers in the United States. We also don't have, you know, the traditional bargaining power because we're so small. And through union, you know, doing labor organizing and building power and talking to my coworkers, I learned about solidarity and I learned about caring deeply about my coworkers and about other people in the world. And, you know, when Palestinian labor organizations put out a call, like probably in October, I don't know exactly when, saying we need labor organizing across the world to stand up, that's when I started listening to Palestinian voices, joined OTEC for Apartheid sometime after that, but also started listening and realizing that Palestinian voices were being silenced and pushed out of the workforce.
Shane, how did you come to Google? What did you do there? And how did you become involved with Palestine Solidarity?
Yeah, so I joined Google about 2 years ago. I was recruited. I'll admit, I felt kind of, I didn't really like going back to working for a big tech company. I had previously worked at Amazon, but I needed to change my life and I, you know, needed a job. But while I was there, I, you know, kept an eye out to hear if there was any efforts to, like, you know, keep the company accountable. When I was at Amazon, I had kind of like just started to learn about kind of some of like the queer community building with Amazon, and didn't really get a chance to get really involved with that. So I think like I had some lingering feelings from that of wanting to be more practically involved. Like Alec, I think I heard about it through the union. I looked into the union pretty quickly. And I attended like a few sort of information sessions and learn more about Google's complicity. And I figured, like, you know, this seems important. I should get involved. And so I worked with the union's anti-militarism group for a number of months before October. And then when that time came around, I found myself sort of in a position where things were growing very rapidly. And so I kind of needed to help participate in seeing that growth grow and like remain cohesive and, you know.
Well, there's a whole bunch of ironies here. First, because Google's slogan, at least at the beginning, was don't be evil. And now it turns out they really are very evil. And secondly, they love to tout their diversity. They love to cut figure as being somehow progressive
and community spirited and building a community. That's what you hear about how lovely it is to work at Google.
And yet they are deeply complicit in one of the worst genocides of the century to date. And they're firing people left and right. And in this case, they're even firing people who apparently just came down to observe and weren't even actually organizing. So that's hugely ironic. How are people responding? Is there any legal or union-based action in response to the terminations?
Yeah, so, you know, we're pursuing the legal rights that we have under the National Labor Relations Act and possibly some other routes. I can't give them deep specifics. And, you know, the laws of justice, well, we hope that they're going to grind fine for us, but they certainly grind slowly. So, you know, we've only been able to take initial steps there. We're hopeful. I think, like, union response is something we're discussing. I think that there's a lot that we can do, but also, you know, we're not at the moment able to say, okay, we're going to have the whole company go on strike, right? We're a minority union. This is just not a power we have access to. And this wasn't a union action. So there's some additional discussion about, like, well, what is the appropriate kind of response to this? These are all questions that this is probably the first time that, you know, we're as a union, we're facing these kinds of challenging labor organizing questions.
What do you mean when you say you're a minority union?
Yeah. So Alphabet Workers Union, we are a union because we say we are. So we're about 1% of the U.S. Google workforce. And that limits what we can do, right? We don't have the legal compulsory bargaining thing that, I know, a majority union does that's been through an NLRB election. But, you know, I mean, even on my team, we had several shop floor actions and got serious working condition concessions just by getting together with our coworkers and ganging up on our bosses and saying, hey, we need this. So we don't have these legal rights necessarily, but we can still organize and still have power.
You don't have a conscience.
No. Well, there are some units that have them, but that's mostly not what we're talking about here.
Now, under federal law, the National Labor Relations Board and other agencies have the power to investigate instances of retaliation. Is there any prospect of NLRB or other government agencies becoming involved with this labor dispute?
We have filed an unfair labor practices charge, which is the way that you get the NLRB involved. So yes, that is the avenue that we are moving on currently.
Great. I know it's very difficult to predict any of this, but do you have a sense that legally you might have a decent case? I certainly think you have a case morally and ethically. I mean, to me, it's an overwhelmingly persuasive case. But does legal counsel suggest that it's a fairly strong case legally that would hold up in court?
I think so. I can't speculate too much, and I'm not a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense that the wider community beyond the world of Google, the Googlers, has heard about this and that this will in any way diminish or tarnish the company's reputation?
I think so. I can just say anecdotally, I feel like I've definitely seen way more talk about this and Google's complicity after the action than I've seen before. Not that I wasn't seeing any before, but just I'm just seeing No Tech for Apartheid mentioned more often. I'm seeing Google mentioned as complicit. I'm seeing more people talk about specifics more, more awareness of like the various technologies that the Israeli government employs. Yeah.
Well, Google is certainly one of the four or five biggest tech companies, not only in the country, but in the world. And I think some people may start using other search engines. I'll just say personally, I myself use DuckDuckGo.com whenever I can. Doesn't track you. I don't get anything for mentioning them. But I think that people all too often think that's the default, right? Google is the default search engine, but what it does is it actually empowers and helps generate profits for a corporation that's deeply involved and deeply complicit in apartheid Israel's illegal occupation and pursuit of genocide in Gaza. So it's something that I think people should start thinking about whenever they go online to do a search.
Well, yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of people are intimidated by that prospect. They think, Google's so entrenched in our lives, it's difficult to find alternatives, but like they're out there. If you look around for them, there are different search engines. There's a wonderful website I use a lot called alternative2.net, which is a good way to just find alternatives to any one thing you're using. I'm still, sadly, still in the progress of like transferring myself off of Google products, but it's just been a busy time. I did start using Proton Mail.
And sure. We only have a minute left. Any last thoughts?
Have Alec? You been punished, the two of you?
We got fired, absolutely. Okay. Along with like 48 of our comrades.
Okay.
50 of us total.
That's you're part of the banished people.
Yes. Yes.
Very quickly.
Yes. We only have a minute left. Any last thoughts? Alex Story, Shane Anderson?
You know, I think that like my message for everybody listening is think about, you know, how would you respond if you found out your workplace had turned into a military contractor, right? How would you respond if you found out that your workplace was not only doing that, but also like letting some of your coworkers get abused and harassed? And what would you need to be able to respond to that? And our answer was labor organizing. And our answer was building community for real. And think about laying the groundwork for that before it becomes an issue. Build a union.
Absolutely. Alex Story, Shane Anderson, thank you so much for coming on Out FM and for telling your story.
Thank you. Great to meet both of you
with your case going forward. We really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Good wishes. Free Palestine. Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
So this is it's wonderful that people are so committed and so willing to take the risks that they are taking here in the United States, where it's relatively easy to pretend that everything is just fine and there's no problems. And you don't have to deal with this whole thing that they keep talking about that's happening in Palestine.
Up next, Out FM's John Riley brings us coverage of a recent protest of the Gaza genocide by ACT UP and Jewish Voice for Peace at an LGBTQ media event.
I'm John Riley with Out FM. In this segment, we present voices from the protest of the Gaza genocide last Saturday during the annual media awards of one of the largest, best-funded LGBT defense organizations, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, or GLAAD for short. GLAAD is a 40-year-old media watchdog against negative representations of queer and trans people. The 150-strong rally outside of the New York City Hilton Hotel was sponsored by the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, or ACT UP, and the Jewish Voice for Peace. It demanded the severing of all of GLAAD's joint work with the Anti-Defamation League, or ADL, which decided last fall to add all Palestinian solidarity events to its tallies of anti-Semitic incidents. The ADL also brings the U.S. police to Israel to be trained in crowd control by high-level military personnel. Outside the event, a 40-foot banner was unfurled from a high floor reading, "New York loves Gaza." Inside, several GLAAD attendees walked out of the event after drag artist and trans advocate Chiquita interrupted the award show in a rhinestoned yellow gown. First, you'll hear Chiquita's cry, then several voices at the outdoor rally.
GLAAD is complicit in genocide! GLAAD is complicit in genocide!
Next is queer Palestinian Syrian artist and writer Noor.
I woke up this morning thinking about my queer siblings in the Southwest Asian and North African world, in Palestine, in the West Bank, in 48, and in Gaza. I am thinking of them as we stand here in New York at the birth of the Stonewall Movement, where we as queer people know that we are not free until we are all free. GLAAD was one of the first queer organizations that I learned about as a young queer Palestinian. They inspired me when I was younger, and I aspired to maybe work with them one day. It breaks my heart to see them choose complicity in genocide and money over supporting queer people of color. Today, instead of being inspired by GLAAD, I stand here inspired by other actual queer folks. I think of Audre Lorde, of the Combahee River Collective, of all the LGBTQ BIPOC folks who have remained and will remain on the front lines of every movement. We are out here today because we as queer people know that pinkwashing does not represent our values. We are here today because we know that Israel's apartheid, violent ethnic cleansing, and genocide of the Palestinian people and their land does not discriminate between queer and non-queer people. We are here today because we know that Palestine will be free, that queer Palestinians will live to be there, see it as such. So we must keep fighting for them, for our ancestors, for all the generations to come. Thank you for listening.
Now you'll hear Brandon Quickie, a representative of ACT UP.
Next up, we have Brandon from ACT UP New York. Woo!
People with HIV and AIDS have lived in Gaza for many years, but the reason you don't hear about it is that LGBTQ plus groups like GLAAD have not centered the stories of queer Palestinians, either on the ground there or as part of the diaspora. People with HIV and AIDS in Gaza the same right to treatment, medication, and life that people with HIV and AIDS have here and everywhere. We don't know the number of immunocompromised people in Gaza who have died since the start of the war, but we still have a chance to save those who remain. They do not deserve to die. So I ask you to raise your voice. Gazans with AIDS under attack. What do we do? Act up, fight back.
Act up, fight back.
Gazans with AIDS.
Gazans with AIDS.
Under attack.
Under attack.
What do we do?
What do we do?
Act up, fight back.
Act up, fight back.
Thank you.
Finally, Amaya Gelman, director of the Institute for the Critical Study of Zionism, and ACT UP member since 1996.
Hello, ACT UP! We are out here to say no to Glad's despicable pinkwashing of the ADL and genocide. The ADL is a right-wing racist organization that is pushing for the genocide of Palestinians. The ADL says it advocates for civil rights, but it has a long history of attacking us. The ADL is spreading disinformation about anti-genocide protests that are led by brave Palestinian, Jewish, and queer students. It has called us terrorists. It has called for the violent policing of protests. The ADL is pushing legislation to criminalize us, to smear anti-racist protests as anti-Semitism. Because the ADL is an over-the-top dramatic bitch, it claims that anti-Zionism is hate speech. It claims that keffiyehs are like swastikas. It claims that standing for Palestinian rights is the same thing as calling for genocide of others. Shame on the ADL. Shame on GLAAD. The ADL also attacks critical race theory, joining the Christian right, saying that teaching the history of racism is harmful to white students. And I'm not kidding you, is Soviet propaganda. Shame on the ADL and shame on GLAAD. For 2 years at least, GLAAD has partnered with the ADL to count anti-queer hate crimes. But ADL stats are racist and unreliable, not only because they count protests as hate speech, but they diminish violence against Black people. They diminish violence against poor people. They don't even count police violence. They treat all violence as the same to hide who has power and who does not, to tell us we need more police instead of more justice. GLAAD is supposed to be teaching media not to do racist, so we demand that GLAAD drop the ADL. In the midst of genocide, GLAAD sent its extremism expert, Sarah Moore, to speak at the ADL conference alongside Jared Kushner, who had just called Gaza valuable real estate. GLAAD pinkwashed this event, which claims year after year that Palestinian resistance to colonization is anti-Semitism, that we who oppose colonialism are just haters, and that Israel's genocide of Palestinians is just self-defense. Queer people want nothing to do with such racist violence. Queer people are resisting such state violence. GLAAD has no right to tie us to such violence. The ADL attacks Jewish movements and anti-apartheid movements and queer movements whenever we stand against racism. That's why 500 social justice organizations demand to drop the ADL. ACT UP and Black and Pink, the National Lawyers Guild, the Center for Constitutional Rights, Democratic Socialists of America, the Movement for Black Lives, Stacey's Rising Up and Moving, Mi Gente, If Not Now, Jewish Voice for Peace, JFRED, Writers Against the War on Gaza, all say drop the ADL. GLAAD and other big NGOs have been pulling the same name of queer safety. The first hate crimes bill they passed also funded war in Iraq and Afghanistan. For shame!
watches.
ACT UP has shown incredible leadership connecting all these issues and showing the world that we are not defined by the violence directed at us, not by counting those incidents, but resisting repression, resisting genocide, resisting the ADL, and demanding that GLAAD do better by us.
Do better by us.
Those were some of the voices at last Saturday's protest against the GLAAD Media Awards in New York. For more information, visit actupny.com and Critical Assignist.
This is Radio Free Palestine. Back in a moment.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. We're seeking 4 new members per hour to make a pledge of support for WPFW. Our loyal, renewing members are the station's lifeblood, but we need everyone on board in order for the station to...
FM, WBAI, New York.
I'm grateful to have WBAI. You know, it's not easy in this country. It's very rare, actually, in this country to find platforms, specifically media platforms, where we can say what we want and how we want it. This is a necessary platform. And if we want to continue to archive the voices of Palestinian Americans and pro-Palestinian voices, we got to pay for it, because freedom is not free in America. They told you it was, but it's not. And so being able to be part of the movement to put our money where our mouth is, if we want freedom of speech, we got to invest in that, unfortunately. And fortunately, you get to do that at WBAI with a team of incredible people, some people who've been at WBAI for decades, continuing to maintain this platform so that new generations like mine can access this space. So go to WBAI.org. Give what you can, my friends. What you have is all we need. So we're not asking for millions here. We are asking for grassroots support. $10, $20, $5, $500 if you have it. If you have $1,000, we'll take that too.
Let's keep it going. WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Go to towerfund.wbai.org and contribute. Do what you can or call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Do your part to help keep us on the air.
And this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. And we are in the process of broadcasting very special programming related to the Nakba, the disaster, the catastrophe, as it is translated in English from Arabic. And we can only do programming like this if we are listener-sponsored, which we are and which we will continue to be as long as you support this radio station. We will continue to broadcast special programming like the one that you're hearing right now.